Feminist Mormon Housewives. I'm your host, Cami, and we're continuing our Narrating Ordained Women series. I have with me a wonderful woman from Norway, Marion. How do you say your last name, Marion?
Fust Sætternes.
Sætternes.
Sætternes, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And am I pronouncing Marion correctly?
Yeah.
Marion?
Yeah, well, you do the English pronunciation, but that's fine.
Uh-huh. What's your pronunciation?
Marion.
Marion. Ooh, I like that better. Marion Fust Sætternes.
Mm-hmm.
Close. I think I butchered that a little bit. Yeah,
that's fine. That's fine.
She lives in a country that is on my bucket list to go visit, and now I have a contact that I would love to go visit anyway, so we'll have to make a date of it, Marion.
Oh, you'd be so welcome. And everybody else.
Awesome. Would you like to tell the audience, first of all, just a little bit about your history with the church and like how long you've been a member? Are you married or single? Do you have children? And what you do for an occupation, if you have one?
Okay, sure. Well, I'm 48 years old. I have a German father, Swedish mother, but I spent most of my life in Sweden. Mm. So that's my primary identity. But now I live in a small place called Namsos in Norway.
It's over by the bay, isn't it? Because I saw a picture of it.
Yeah, it's by a fjord, sort of, and a river that runs out into the fjord. So Os, the last two... letters in the name Namsos, it actually means that it's where the river runs out into the bay. So I'm an architect and I work as such. I've worked in the same place for 11 years now in this town. Mm. I'm married to a Norwegian and I'm the bonus mother of four, one girl and three boys. They're not so small anymore, growing up quickly. The youngest is 15. I've been a member most of my life, all of my life, really. My mother joined the church around the time of my birth. That was in Germany. Since then I lived in many places. I've served in primary presidencies, young women presidencies. I've taught in Relief Society Institute. Right now I'm a gospel doctrine teacher. Mm. I went on a mission to England, London South.
Wow.
I live pretty far away from my closest ward, so it's a 6-hour drive back and forth, so I don't attend every Sunday, but I love my ward. There are lots of good people there. And I come from a line of feminists. It's part of my mitochondrial inheritance.
Oh,
I
really?
Guess you would say. Yeah.
What type of feminist actions did they participate in?
Oh, lots. Well, actually, this summer I received some poems that my grandmother had written, and some of them are about feminist issues. Hmm. And she was active in some groups early on and wrote different articles and so on the subject. And my mother has been very active, very politically active. But she's in a group called Women for Peace right now. Hmm. So she's always been, I think, pretty feminist bent.
Is Women for Peace? Are they aligning themselves with anti-war sort of?
Yeah, so, okay. Yeah, you could say that.
Okay.
I'm not very well studied in their program, so I don't want to say too much about it. But okay. I think I've, another thing is, as I said, I'm Swedish, and it's probably the most feminist country in the world. So most political parties call themselves feminist. I think there's one or two exceptions, if I remember right.
Mm-hmm.
It's a topic of much debate and much discussion, and so it's something that's always been a part of my conscience.
Right, part of your heritage. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just studying in our multicultural therapy class. And we were looking at the countries that have the best the best programs for child care and for maternal leave and so forth. And they were all mm-hmm. countries that are very, very strong in feminism. And you were just mentioning Sweden, and Sweden, I could not, we were all sitting there going, wow, we got to move. Because I mean, it was like this paid time, just this amazing family-centered type of care for people when they have children, either adopting or through pregnancy. And it was amazing. So mm-hmm. it's amazing how that does affect everything. And feminism does change a lot of things that help the family be more centered, because that is what matters to women. You know, they're making sure their children are fed, making sure that their children have education, making sure that they have the right. Anyways, I could go on and on, but
yeah. I think we'll probably get back to that, but I think equal say in political matters is a matter of great importance. So.
Yes, very mm-hmm. much. And their pay rate is just as equal with men. It's just fantastic. So
I think we're a little bit off on that one still, but
are you?
Yeah, but we're. I think vocations that are dominated by women are still lagging.
Really?
Some. Okay. But it's it's improving slowly.
Okay.
I hope.
Inch by uh-huh. inch, it's a cinch. So, well, Marianne. So, with all that matriarchal influence in your life, that probably explains a lot of why, but I would love to hear your own words on when and why you posted your profile on ordainedwomen.org.
Okay. Well, I posted it on April 1st this year, 2014. But it wasn't meant as a joke. I had sent it in about 2 weeks beforehand, I think. Of course, it had been on my mind for some time. So I'll try to be careful about how I phrase this, because there is of course, a long line of events that have led me to align myself with mm-hmm. ordained women. Mm-hmm. I have not encountered very many problems personally with leadership in the Mormon Church, in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, but most leaders, most men have been very kind to me personally, mm-hmm. And I've had a lot of privilege also, once I spoke before an apostle in a state conference.
Wow.
That was when I was 17 or 18, And, you know, once it was Elder Hales. He picked me out of a crowd of, you know, in Temple Square. I was like 20 yards away, and he said, he waved at me because he recognized me from some youth conference. And so I've always always felt very valued, listened to, and, you don't necessarily have bad feelings about the word patriarchy. I love the yeah. patriarchy in our state. But there have been some questions over the years that have been very serious ones. There was a court held on a member of my family when I was in my 20s. Mm. And that, of course, imagining that court, I was thinking about what it would be like to be in front of a panel of only men, mm-hmm. and that just never seemed quite right to me. Mm-hmm. And when I saw the PBS program, The Mormons, in 2007 or whenever it was, it seemed to confirm to me that this can be very problematic. Mm-hmm. There was one line in that program that really cut to the heart of me, and it was when Margaret, yeah, Okay. Margaret Toscana was being interviewed, and she was telling a little bit of her experience from the court that she was in. Mm. And at one point there, she was in front of a panel of 60 men, as I guess it was in the stake. Mm-hmm. At one point, she was starting to sort of defend herself or try to explain her views, and, mm-hmm. and somebody cut her off and said, "We will not allow you to lecture us. We will not allow you to use this kind of reasoning again. You're only allowed to speak as we give you permission."
Yes.
And that really, when I heard that, you know, of course, this was her really conveying it. So, you know, it might be not exactly word by word, but still that sentence, even though it may not be, you know, protocol, still that sort of gave me the chills that somebody can just shut you up in a circumstance where you are the only one defending yourself. Somebody mm-hmm. can tell you to be quiet. Mm-hmm. And that gave me a pause. You know, so I just always felt like there ought to be a balance in circumstances like that, mm-hmm. where so that both men and women are listened to and adhered to. So mm-hmm. so that was one of the very difficult points of, you know, of the church structure that has bothered me for a long time. Mm. Another one that also bothered me is some of the language in our temple ceremonies that seem to imply that men are to be listened to more than women. And mm. and I always felt uncomfortable about this, because when I look around in the world, I would see a lack of female voices in so many areas. I wouldn't see a balance, and I would see that this is a problem. And wherever there is a lack of female voices, you know, those countries or those businesses, they always do less well than where there is a better balance. So,
yeah.
So this language always bothered me. And a couple of years back, when I was listening to it, it just really struck to my heart. It made me feel even more uncomfortable than normal, because I was feeling that I was sort of diminishing myself as a daughter of God,
mm-hmm.
by I don't know, by not speaking up against this, I suppose. So that caused me to have not a crisis of faith, I wouldn't say, but sort of a crisis of praxis. How would I go about my spiritual life, you know, with having this discomfort and not wanting to experience that necessarily.
Right.
So not much later, I came across the post "All Are Alike Unto God," which is a list of things that can be improved you know, create a better balance in the church between men and women. And I read it through, and I was a bit, not afraid, but a little bit anxious to sign it. But you know, I read it through several times. I thought about it, and after some days, I added my name. I'm a collectivist. I always sign things for Amnesty and mm-hmm. for all sorts of causes. And this time it was, you know, within my own church, things that I saw could be improved.
Mm-hmm.
It made me a little bit anxious, but not very. And most of all, I was really happy that there were other people working in the same direction.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really good. And then, of course, this was a while ago. And then last October, I heard about ordained women. I don't know. I might have heard about it before, but I don't remember. But I, of course, saw that action where they went to the priestess session.
Yes.
And asked to come in. And And I also saw some of the pushback and some of the reactions, and I just, they didn't equate at all to me, because when I looked at these faces, they were sincere and honest, and it was, you know, it was a peaceful question, and the pushback was just pretty harsh.
Yeah,
and some of the pushback, and so I just I just started to think about ordaining women. If what I thought about it, if that really was necessary, I had never really thought about it in those terms before.
Mm-hmm.
but it came really as an aha experience. The list of questions that are listed in, you know, all are alike unto God. We may fix them all without having the priesthood given to women. We may fix each and every one of them, I think, and we may have progress in the church. But I do believe that as long as the women are not a natural part of every decision-making table, then new problems will keep creeping in. And I think it's just because of the structure of the church,
mm-hmm.
Because all decisions are made by people holding the priesthood, all important decisions about praxis and about theology and about discipline and other things. I think by ordaining women, we might have a better balance in making those decisions, because there clearly has not been enough emphasis on equality within our church, I do not think, and there needs to be, and so ordaining women would be a way to include a gender balance in every important venue.
So you were kind of looking at it from like a practical, just in the whole structure and how the whole organization functions. What I'm hearing is that you're saying that you think there would be a better balance, not only to just put women in positions that don't necessarily need the priesthood, but by having the priesthood, there would be a balance between the men and the women, and there wouldn't be like a gender based mm-hmm. function. Is that what I'm hearing? Okay.
Just the other day, I was thinking about it in a different term. I guess, you know, you hear a lot of people that are not religious being very, very wary of organized religion.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they do have a point, because I think our theology, and I'm speaking of all religions,
mm-hmm.
are somewhat flawed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are good parts and there are not so good parts mm-hmm. in there. And if you look at the Old Testament, there are lots of not so good parts in there.
Mm-hmm.
And some of that stems from another allegory. If you look at the world of advertisement and you've been made aware of it once, you will see that women are often objectified.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Whereas men are agents.
Mm-hmm.
And if you start reading in our scriptures with those glasses on, you will notice the same thing, that women are not subjects, they're objects.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the time, not all the time, but almost very much so.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm concerned with theology, and I'm concerned that a theology that does objectify one gender more than the other, or, you know, it's not just about gender, but about humans
mm-hmm.
all kinds of, you know, right. All of us, we're all born into this world. We're all different. And, you know, we have things that bind us together and things that differ. And things that we're born with should not condition our access to God. Mm-hmm. And with the language that is used in many religious circumstances, also in our church, it's as if women are one more step removed from the presence of God. And I know lots of Mormon women will disagree with me on this point, but I think we do have a problem, and I do think we have a problem when we look at our scriptures, because they're so silent. I mean, there are very few female voices, and if you look at the future, you know, generations from now, if we do not ordain women, then we will not have any scripture made from women speaking. And I think that will be to the detriment of religious women in the future, but also for the church as such, because of course it should try to keep to hold on to both men and women. I think we're all a little bit hurt by gendered language. Yeah. Sometimes. Unconsciously, but I think it's an important subject to explore.
Yeah, that's very, very well put. When you posted this, and not only since you posted it, but also since Kate Kelly's trial, what type of responses have you had? What have you had to deal with in your life with your involvement with ordained women?
if I just back up a little bit to the trial, it was quite beautiful. Actually, I was on a journey north, even further north than where I live, for work, and I knew there was, vigils in different places planned for her. So I brought some candles with me I just brought the New Testament and I had a little vigil of my own by a riverside in a town called Muchen. Mm. And it happened to be the brightest night of the year, midsummer. And I was sitting there in a beautiful sunset, and I was struggling a little bit by when I was lighting the candles. But the beautiful thing was that there was a cloud on the top of the mountain on the other side of the river where I was sitting. And as I was lighting my candle, the cloud lit up, and it was in the shape of a candle.
Yes, I saw that on your Facebook.
It was quite, and it was there for a long time. I took many pictures of it, and also I had only brought the New Testament and the Psalms with me, and because it's a small book, I have it in a small book. I was reading in Romans, I think it was Romans 8, and I was reading in, maybe it wasn't 8, I was reading in Swedish, and it was just really fitting what I found, because it said, here it is, who can charge the chosen ones of God? God delivers. God frees us. If God frees us, who can
be against us?
Yeah.
Would you read that in your native language? Just read that scripture.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. And I don't know which translation this is. But anyway. Okay. Vem kan anklaga Guds utvalda? Gud frikänner. Vem kan då fälla? The whole chapter there, that's in chapter 8, yes, in Romans. And it was, I looked it up in the English one, and in King James Version, but it was prettier in Swedish.
Yeah.
But I just happened to, this was the chapter that I opened, I sat there for for about an hour. It was about this, you know, it was midnight where I was, but it was almost the same time as the vigils in the States. And I was just spiritually very uplifted. And so, you know, some people have said this before, but so in my heart, Kate is not excommunicated.
Right.
And you know, in my heart, neither would Margaret be.
Right.
I, of course, have not met these people, but that's how I feel about it. So afterwards, well, I've had some pushback, but mostly a very gentle kind. Some people have stated on their own Facebook pages that they're happy with the status quo with the mother priesthood paradigm, and that they support the general authorities, of course, and things like this, and some people have responded to posts that I've had put out, but I'm a prolific poster, so it's been very mild, really. Somebody offered to give me a book on the priesthood, you know, the one by
Sherry Dew.
Yeah, you know, but that also, I think that shows me that people are thinking about the issue, are thinking about me. And someone sent me a link, you know, the Mormon Women Stand One, and stand by, but not with Kate Kelly.
Oh,
and
right.
I honestly have not read it yet. I will someday, but I can just tongue in cheek. I have to just answer. You know, I'm willing to stand by, but not with Mormon Women Stand, because I just think they're a reaction to a movement that is, you know, in my mind, a little bit more thought through. But that's, well,
yeah,
that's my stand on it. I've actually heard more from women than from men, and some of them seem to exhibit a little bit of fear, you know, telling me, like, it's your free agency. Of course, you choose what to do with it, but watch out, that kind of language. And but I've also had some surprising encouragement from people with leadership positions in the church.
Really?
And also, I've had long interviews with my bishop and with my stake president. Stake president was before the court of, you know, Kate Kelly's court, but it was, he said it was his longest temple recommend interview ever. So we covered a lot of ground. But it was, you know, it was a kind and it felt, I had a good spiritual feeling the whole way through. And the same with when I spoke to my bishop, they're both caring people and very kind. So, so far I've not been reprimanded, really.
Good.
I've been encouraged to take my post down on ordained women, but it doesn't feel right to me, because this post helps me to reconcile my feminist views with my spiritual beliefs, and it makes me feel more of a whole person. There's, you know, my personal dichotomy is not there anymore, and so I don't feel like I can go back to having internal dichotomies when I don't have to. But what else?
That's very well put. I think that's true. Like Kate Kelly said, when she posted the ordainedwomen.org, she went to church and she finally felt free. Like, she just, this huge weight was lifted off her, because she was completely authentic with her faith and her vision of better. And it's especially when it's done out of love and out of a sense of personal integrity. Kind of hard to go back on your personal integrity, you know?
No, it's more, the thing is, you know, it would be different if I felt unsure about my standing with God. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a person, I'm always both doubting and both believing. I'm mm-hmm. always oscillating between them, but I always land on, I try to, that's not, I don't say I'm always landing on, but I try to land on the actions that I see are most beneficial, both for people around me and for my own emotional and spiritual well-being, mm-hmm. even if they're costly, even if they cost a lot. That's what I try to do. So in my actions, and a lot of the time, these actions have confirmed my faith. Mm-hmm. And so I got sidetracked. I don't know what I was going to say, but the yeah. So if I felt like I was being as if I was being apostate from the divine or you mm-hmm. know the spiritual side of my life, then you know I would be more concerned. But I have rarely felt so much peace, comfort, mm-hmm. faith, even hope. Although I must say that you know I kind of. I'm afraid that it'll be a very, very long haul and very, you know, mm-hmm. there will be ups and downs. You know, I have to say even hope because I do believe that it's a well-studied cause and there are very, very many good reasons to stand with ordained women. So,
yeah, it is, I kind of felt like there was a blow to the feminine psyche in our church after her excommunication. At the same time, because I have seen so many church authorities work, I don't mean this to sound mean, but whether it's out of a loving intent or a feeling of trying to fulfill their leadership as a judge in Israel, whatever, I've seen too much of this type of ecclesiastical abuse where you can be kicked out or hurt by church authorities based off mm-hmm. of opinions and not doctrine. And I've seen that over and over. And so in some ways, when her excommunication was announced, I thought, well, the positive side of this is that that is a very, very real issue that needs to be addressed in our church, the lack of this ecclesiastical roulette where you never know what you could get in trouble with. And mm-hmm. so I think it brought both the equality issue, the ordained women issue, and ecclesiastical abuse issue to the forefront. And it is on everyone's topic, if there could be anything good out of it. But it does, I felt this wound in the psyche of the feminine divine in our uh-huh. church. So it's hard sometimes to talk about hope after that. But with that in mind, do you still have hope, or what would be like your vision of ordained women? It kind of feels like religion is like the last frontier for women, you know, because it's such a ingrained part of our psyche for thousands of years, where men lead and men speak for God. And we have women in politics, we have women in, you know, all sorts of things, technology, science, what have you, but this seems like the final frontier. I think it rings at such a deep level of consciousness for all of us that there is going to be some very violent pushback. But what would be your vision for ordained women in the LDS Church, and why do you still have hope in it?
Well, one thing is, when I posted my profile, I was a bit anxious. I was hoping it would come up before General Conference, in case there was, there was a negative talk there, so I wanted it to be there. It's always been very important to me to stand up and be counted, and I just, you know, I guess I was feeling that maybe perhaps right after conference it might be perceived as more obnoxious or something, or, you know, more cheeky. But so I was really glad it came up before. But what has happened since with ordained women is in my mind quite fantastic, and that is that more and more voices are added, and there are voices of people that have had similar concerns as me, or you know, sibling concerns, or whatever you would like to say, and but most of us have probably been rather quiet about it, but now we have found a way to connect and to discuss this. Mm-hmm. And I see ordained women growing I'm thinking that maybe, you know, in a few years, maybe there will be one in every stake, or three in every stake, and one in every ward. And sometime there will be a tipping point where people will no longer be able to, it will have to be taken seriously.
Right, because people won't be quiet.
You know, this paradigm, this priesthood motherhood paradigm that they somehow are equal. I think that will stop making sense eventually.
Yeah.
At least in those parts that where it doesn't make sense clearly. And then you know, there will. I'm sort of hoping for like a tipping point. Mm-hmm. But I think when that happens, I think we're only, you know, so far along the road, because what we really have to do in our church, but in all religions, is to address misogyny where it is present in our scriptures, in our canon, in our discourse, in our lessons, wherever it is, and refute it. And I see that to be a very difficult and long process. And well, but theology is my main concern, because when the individual is not safe in an organization, completely safe, then there is you can critique organized religion for being malign, is that what you say?
Right.
And partly rightly so. And you know, I love going to church. It's helped me develop as a person, of course, through all the callings that I've had. And then it helps me connect with people. It helps me just the act of singing together, or being quiet together, and feeling, you know, spiritually uplifted. I rarely go home from a Sunday without feeling much happier than I did before. And of course, I enjoy visiting teaching, and so for me, church has been very, very helpful for my in my search for the divine and for purpose in my life, and so forth. And I want it to be this safe place without the poisonous parts of misogyny.
Right.
And I see that as a very long quest. I see that as a very, very long quest. But it's sort of, I think ordained women is just like a first step in that direction. And of course, I think that the bigger problem is that we keep losing people to being atheists or agnostics, you know, that's fine if you're happier that way. But if you're missing something, if you're missing that communion with sisters and brothers, then and we're as a people that should build Zion, you're pushing people out because they're not safe with us. Then, you know, then that's not what my God would want. So we have a way to, we have repentance. Repenting to do, I think, as an institution. and as individuals. And and by that, I don't mean that there's a lot of meanness, because a lot of it is ignorance. And also within myself, of course, because some things I'm aware of now and some things I'm not. And I'm not more aware than I am at any given point in time, and I'm just a person. So it's a journey.
Humility is needed everywhere, and just when you think you know better, life will teach you that you don't. But yeah, it is a long process, and yet I think looking at the next generation coming up, you know, we want things better for them. And I hope that your vision is realized and that there's nobody who falls by the wayside and because of the feeling of being unsafe, whether it's as a woman, as a feminist, as an LGBT member, that it's just safe and that we can see eye to eye and know as we are known, and that is Zion. So I hold your hand across the sea, sister. I in this vision, and maybe we'll stand one day and look at that beautiful cloud coming to light, and it'll be fulfilled.
Oh,
that'd be nice.
That's beautiful. Thank you very much.
You are welcome. And is there anything you'd like to say in your native tongue to your to the saints there?
Kära vänner, jag är så glad att ni har lyssnat på det här, att ni har haft tålamod att lyssna på mig. Jag hoppas att ni finner er egen väg och att vi tillsammans alltid kan sträva mot större ljus och större kunskap, för det är vad min tro handlar om.
Mm. Translation?
Oh, if I can remember. I was thanking my friends or whoever is listening that they have had patience to listen this far, and I'm hoping that we all can carry on the work or strive towards having greater light and greater knowledge, greater intelligence, because that's what my faith is all about.
Thank you, Marian. You've got to keep your